welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Weisel Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a woman that spells her name with letters. It's Megan Nom Nom Hoffmeyer.
Ooh, yeah.
Nom Nom?
Nom Nom?
Hand?
Hand.
Bird. Wait, Shark, get off the radio.
I love King Shark, or Nanawe.
Oh, I love it. It's Stallone in that thing.
Oh, so fun thing I looked up about King Shark and being written into this movie. James Gunn wrote the part with Stallone in mind.
Oh, wow.
Really dumbed down Rocky, but the studio was hesitant to go that route. And after a long interview process where they looked at hundreds of people, they actually recorded the King Shark part three times.
Oh, wow.
And they didn't like any of it. And they were feeling not confident. And they finally caved and let him ask Sylvester Stallone. And he came in and did it.
And crushed it.
Yeah. Oh, he did great. He's so fun. It's very Stallone. It's so fun. And the design of King Shark, he's kind of adorable.
When he's underneath that tarp in
the
car.
Oh my gosh, he's so cute in the bus.
I love that little guy. And I just want to clarify.
He's so murdery, but he's so cute.
He eats people and rips people in half.
Yeah.
And it's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want everyone to know, I called myself Weasel. I have not murdered 27 children. Just want to give everyone the heads up. And I know how to swim.
Oh, yes.
And
good.
I avoid belly flops at all costs because they're horrible.
I don't know who designed him, but he's just disgusting. I can't look at him anymore. We've watched this movie a bunch of times now, and I can't do the weasel scenes.
Now, does he look more like a werewolf or an Afghan hound?
I don't know. Maybe just like a mutt?
Why does TDK call him an Afghan hound?
I have no idea, because they're all kind of dumb, and they're part of the distraction squad.
And does Blackguard not know how to work a seatbelt?
Because clearly not.
TDK had to show him how to do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of good bits in that first, how many minutes, 10 minutes of the movie?
I think the finest, I think Joel Kinnaman is really good in this, and I'm very happy that he got a larger role, but I love how he says weasel, weasel. Mm-hmm. Just a very interesting inflection on that. Megan.
Yes.
I've watched this movie 3.5 times in a week.
Wow. You must love it.
And I want to watch it again now.
Yeah, you were just talking about watching it right now.
I was listening to the soundtrack before we started this.
Ooh.
Very good soundtrack.
Yeah, I can't wait. We did order the Mondo vinyl with the new art and everything. I'm excited for it to get
Starfish,
here.
Very pretentious.
James Gunn puts together some really cool soundtracks, and I read an interview with him in Hollywood Reporter where he talked about, they said, you know, are there songs that you can't get? And he said, no, I just tell the team that you should be able to get that song. And don't come back to me and tell me you can't get it. So they didn't tell him if they had problems. But I think he puts together some really compelling soundtracks.
They're not busted. Even though life is busted.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, people just want to
be loved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By not you, but anybody.
Yeah. By someone.
Weasel.
Not by Weasel.
You had a violent reaction to Weasel.
He's so gross looking.
What's Weasel's power? So I read...
Probably just vicious.
I read that Weasel went insane and dressed up as a weasel and started killing people.
The
real character, yeah.
Okay.
But this weasel...
Is a real weasel?
I mean, does Weasel have weasel, like King Shark-esque power?
I don't know. He doesn't seem to be able to talk.
Yeah. And I guess King Shark makes sense because of Aquaman and his bulletproof skin.
Well, King Shark is also a demigod. His father is a shark god,
mm-hmm.
and that's why he has so much power. He can speak. I mean, he's kind of dumb. I did look a little bit into he's had so many iterations, but one of the cutest is in the current cartoon. He has a giant hoodie.
Aw.
I know. He's just my favorite.
I like this movie. And listen, James Gunn came back into it. And I have made you watch, Slither. Not make you. You like Slither. And
I do.
I showed you Super.
It's very weird and gross.
And so a lot of people got their introduction to James Gunn. Like, okay, I'm saying the mainstream. Like, mm-hmm. not cinephiles.
Yeah.
Who
watch
Slither.
The Guardians movies.
So they got their James Gunn fix with Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, PG-13. I mean, they still sneak in Salvador Dali bodily function jokes. I mean, there's a lot of interesting bits.
They are. They're not as prevalent, I think, as in the Guardians movies, but because there's so much happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just constant stuff in this movie.
And the jokes are nonstop, but when a lot of people are like, oh, the gore is so over the top. This is so over the top. I'm thinking to myself, this dude worked for Troma and did Romeo and Juliet.
You guys heard of Slither?
I wrote an article for Rotten Tomatoes about Super and Slither. Like, I got to write about their 15th and 10th anniversary at the same time because they were released relatively close to that, like, August release dates.
And Super is quite mean, too, right?
Man, and you know what's interesting about Super? It's kind of an anti-superhero movie. It's about this guy who gets this vision from God and starts bludgeoning skulls with a pipe wrench.
Yikes.
And it's just a gnarly, mean movie. And so watching this and then watching Guardians and Slither, I feel like it's a wonderful way to prepare himself for this R-rated $200 million movie. Because
it's big.
There's touches of Guardians, but there's also touches of Slither and
for sure
Super in this. And I love it. And I think he really was able to synthesize everything really well. And it's a shame that this movie isn't doing quite well. I mean, last time we checked, it's about 70 million worldwide. But I do think a lot of people stayed home and watched on HBO Max. They said it was their number two movie watch behind Batman v Superman.
Well, we definitely contributed to that 3.5 times.
Yeah, and just, you know, with the times, with the Delta and different world, like the different release dates around the country, it's just interesting watching people talk about how this movie tanks. Like, this is not, yes, it underperformed. I mean, Godzilla vs. Kong made boatloads of money. Quiet Place Part 2 made boatloads of money.
True.
But this is an R-rated.
It's very R-rated. I was surprised on our last viewing how many times the F word is said. Just casually. I mean, I'm totally fine with using the F word all the time, but I noticed it that time. How often it just pops up in general conversation.
What I do like, though, is you hear about a lot of actors who, when they improv, they just drop the F-bomb. Because that's what they think. Like, we need some improv. Yo, I'm going to... And then the director's like, oh my gosh, that's horrible. But in this one, you don't really notice the profanity unless you...
No.
Like, this is random, but remember when, like, you...
It feels quite natural.
I was going to bring it, like, the duster that we had rented on one trip. And then started noticing dusters everywhere.
Yeah.
So I guess if you start thinking about the profanity, you'll see it everywhere in it.
Yeah.
But I just enjoy this experience. And also, too, I was thinking about this today, and I just found a really neat article about it where they talked about all the fight scenes in the movie. And I was kind of thinking about the different action scenes that are in this film. The first action scene is just the glorious, bloody setup that just, you know, Captain Boomerang is killed. Weasel, quote-unquote, drowns.
This is quite sad, though, Boomerang.
Oh, man, and, you know...
Doesn't Harley scream, Boomer, Boomy?
Yeah, and he had the best line, too, about... He's like, you think that's a dog? He's like, all names are letters. Like, he had some really good bits, and we get to watch, like, Blackguard, Mongol, Javelin just get murdered. But I like that it sort of separates the gang. It gets Harley on one thing, it gets Rick Flag on another thing, mm-hmm. and then you cut to another group coming in, and it just shows that Amanda Waller is quite devious, and she knows... You know, like, all the... Well, I think it's Blackguard's fault that all the people got them there.
Yeah, they... I mean, if you think about it, I wouldn't think that she put them out there to be killed, although it seems that her team had some reservations about some of their abilities, given the betting that was going on. Normal Monday morning meeting.
Oh, my God. Get back to work, Dale, you dickhead! Oh, I love that line.
But,
like, the action scenes, though, like, that shows that... They can, it sets up the other group walking onto the beach. And then you have the scene where all the gorillas are murdered.
Oh, gosh.
That shows how just violent the crew are and just shows, like, the humor. There's competitiveness between the two. And then we get Harley's action scene where she goes down the hall and just murders people.
Oh my gosh.
It showcases her abilities really well. And then we get the beautiful fight between Rick Flag and Captain Boomerang. That'd be interesting. Peacemaker. You get the wonderful fight between those two. And I was reading about this, and I thought this was pretty cool what they said. This is what James Gunn said. He's like, we worked very, very hard on that fight. The Rain fight and the Harley fight, Gunn says. The stunt coordinator, Guy Norris, who does all the Mad Max Fury Road movies, you know, no big deal.
Nothing small stuff.
He's doing the latest one, too. But he wrote, I would come in... He would put something together, I would come in, and he would just change some things and chop some things away. It took a lot of work, and it had no unnecessary elements. All those fights would have started off 5 times as long as they were. But I find that when you're shooting these long fights, you don't want repetitive stuff. The fight itself has to be a story. It was our requirement that all of the action need to be part of the storytelling. But that fight, in particular, was brutal. It's a very sad fight, because those characters were very happy with each other, and probably having the time of their lives just 2 hours earlier. And I kind of love, too, where they ask who would win. Kinnaman's like, his biceps are the size. Like, he has a vein in his bicep that's bigger than me. And Cena said, I haven't been in a fight in 20 years. Like, if I got into a fight, I would try to fake punch someone and expect them to fall down. But I was thinking about these fights where I think they do a good job storytelling. They're like, my biggest annoyance, and you know this with action scenes, are when they're pointless. Or there's a spin kick that's not necessary. Like, there's just not, I don't know. I like the fighting to be part of the story. And I think all these fights tell a story. And I really love the Flag Peacemaker fight because it hurts. I got mad.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible that we have to lose him. Yeah. And Peacemaker is such a jerk.
Yeah. And I love Cena in it. And everyone talked about how professional he was on set, which I 100% agree with. And I like Peacemaker. But it just kind of stinks when Flag finally gets to become this cool part of the team. But I guess it makes sense. Like, what are you going to do with him moving forward? Who knows if you're going to get another one? And with that death with Peacemaker doing that, that sets up the great chase with Ratcatcher. That sets up the great showdown with Bloodsport. So, Bloodsport? Bloodshot. He's fighting Jean-Claude Van Damme. But it's Idris Elba. So I guess the long way of me talking through is I love the action in this movie. Because how many superhero movies have we watched where they just, the fight scenes don't, there doesn't seem to point to them sometimes. They're just there. So I dig all the storytelling in the fight scenes.
Well, and going back to the very beginning, I like that this movie just jumps into the action and the fights. And it doesn't waste a lot of time on setup and backstory. It doles that out throughout the movie with its little cutaways and its, you know, 10 minutes ago or 3 days ago. But we get right into action scenes, which is fun. And it makes it very engaging for the audience.
Absolutely. And
it's a very interesting storytelling style, this movie, but it works.
We get 3 hours earlier, or 3 minutes earlier,
yeah,
and different little bits like that.
Hey, I've got a question for you. So why do you think Harley's on the B-Squad?
Well, the problem is, though, when we learn that Rick Flag is still alive, she diverts her entire team to get Flag. And she likes Flag. Mm-hmm. So do you think that's...
But it seems like Idris' team had the main directive, though.
You know, well, I think so did they. But maybe she knows that Rick Flag's already a leader. And Harley's good, so they gave him a B-Squad, them a B-Squad. And then the other squad hasn't proven themselves yet.
Because
they're quite loose. Like, you have a dumb shark,
a
very tired millennial, Peacemaker, and Bloodshot, who's just grumpy.
Yeah, and he definitely doesn't want to be leading. He's there reluctantly, under duress.
So I guess they just put Flag. But see, I think she just knows Red Flag will get the best out of this crew. And we never got to see them in action because they just get slaughtered.
Oh, I know. Well,
so fast.
Yeah.
I feel bad for... And Boomerang was on there, though. He's not B-Squad. Like, he helped save the world once.
Yeah, I feel bad for Boomerang. You know, that's something else I noticed about this movie upon multiple watchings. I was just really engaged in all the eye candy and the loud stuff and the, you know, just fun pieces here and there and the jokes when I first watched it. And then I really sat back and noticed how it is a suicide, too. Because they've got these people who they don't spend a lot of time acknowledging their roles in the first movie, but it's definitely, it's there. You can tell that it happened and we're moving on very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that about it.
Yeah, they're not going, hey, remember that time that we had to kill your...
Yeah, and there's no recap, you know, remember, and this 2 years ago when we did blah, blah, blah. And these people were all in the squad, and this is where they are now. No, none of that. They sort of acknowledge it within the story, and then they just keep going from there.
I originally thought, I mean, you look at this script, right? Bloodshot, played by Idris Elba. He's so good in this movie. It makes me so happy. No, I love his range in this. I mean, there's scenes where he's just running all goofily. I mean, this is a guy who's trained, like, has a Thai kickboxer. He's a legit badass. But I love watching him walk goofily and not, I don't know, he's... And just looks silly. And, like, there's a scene where Peacemaker shows him up. He's like, man, that's cool. There's a neat unselfishness. There's a selflessness to the role. And I originally thought that maybe they rewrote, they didn't, like, Will Smith was supposed to be in this movie because, you know, Will Smith's character had a daughter and he has all the same traits as Bloodshot.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was researching this movie, and they said that Will Smith wasn't really considered a lot because he already became a leader in that movie. He became that. Oh, okay. So if you have him in this movie, who's learning, right? Who's,
true. Yeah, what's the arc?
So in this movie, Idris gets the arc. And Waller, even though she was going to blow his head off, I think she's happy about it. Like, she's like, I told you I'd make you a leader.
Well, it gives a great moment at the end when he sort of has her hands tied behind her back and she relents and she's like, fine, great.
After she gets whomped. Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That was such a great moment.
Yeah, what does she have, a ice pack against her face when she relents to his demands?
And then Dale gets yelled at. But one thing about Suicide Squad 2016 that she was in, and listen, I always think she's excellent in her movies, but there's a lot of just saying how bad she is. She's the worst. She'll mess you up. She'll take you down. But I think this one really exhibits those traits of hers. And we noticed this the first time we watched it, how tired she looks with everybody. She's just exhausted. This is her job.
She's world weary. It's evident, which is good. It's great acting.
And she deals with so many idiots that she's just so tired of it. She doesn't even hide it anymore.
Yeah, the side eye and just all the little touches of her performance really sell her as being as tough as she is.
I love her so much more in this movie, too. And she's looking at her crew when they're just doing their job later on after she's been whomped in the head. And I like her golfing scene. That gives her so much more character, too.
Oh, yeah.
And a nice Easter egg. One thing, too, before we get too far, but Michael Rooker's character in this movie, when I love that, you know, we're introduced to the movie to him. This guy's been a James Gunn stable for the longest time. But I love how he goes down. He just sees everything going. He totally freaks out. He tries to swim away, and he just gets his head blown off. But the best part is, a bird starts eating his brains.
Yes, the bird revenge.
Because he kills a bird in the beginning.
Oh, it's hard to watch. I asked you to fast forward through the last time we watched it.
There's a lot of bird death in this movie.
There's so much bird death. Okay, this is funny. So people were tweeting at James Gunn, why do you hate birds? And he replied to a bunch of them saying, I don't. He actually posted some pictures with birds. Saying that he doesn't, but it was very funny that people are acknowledging that out there on social media. Why do you hate birds, man?
Well, he murdered a lot of birds in this. That's a fair question.
It is.
The birds are slaughtered, wholesale slaughtered.
You just gotta love Twitter for that kind of stuff.
But I guess people could say, why do you hate people?
True.
Like, why do you hate polka dot people? Why do you hate pokies?
Aw.
He's so good, isn't he?
He's really good.
I guess what I do love about this movie, too, is the finale of this film. We have a large shark. We have Idris Elba. We have a guy named the Polka Dot Man, who he's also part of XCON in Ant-Man, which I absolutely love. Dasmalchin?
I think so,
yeah. David Dasmalchin. Polka Dot Man, he's in Ant-Man and the Wasp. He's the Baba Yaga.
He's going to be in Dune.
Oh, he's been crying. I mean, he was in Dark Knight. But you have him, and then you have, I think, probably my favorite character in this movie, Danielle Melchior, who plays Ratcatcher 2.
Oh my gosh.
We listened to that on Google, too, and I forgot how to say the name. Like, we got the translation for it.
But it was difficult. There's not a lot of people actually saying her full name out there, so.
But I think she's the MVP of this movie, because it's just, she has this heart to her film. And there's this, I love the scene where, okay, I guess we got to jump into where Bloodshot has his daughter. There's a scene in the beginning.
Oh, they're screaming match?
They're trying to recruit him for the Suicide Squad, but he doesn't want to do it. But his daughter got caught stealing a TV watch. What? It does other things!
It does other things!
Yeah. And then Amanda Waller's going to put her in prison. She might die, so then he has to accept. And then he takes Ratcatcher 2 under his wing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just like her character. We have a polka dot guy who sees nothing but his mother. Insane. And he has an interdimensional virus. He has to expel polka dots, but it's brutal. He melts people with these polka dots. And then you have Harley Quinn running around being awesome. She can do great running in those boots.
Yeah.
Margot Robbie is a great movie runner. And then just the shark nom-nomming. I just love the ending because it's so unconventional. It's not who you think would be in a $200 million movie getting it done. You have Idris. You have a shark, which makes me happy.
You
have a rat catcher. I mean, Margot Robbie's probably, I mean, listen, I've loved Idris since The Wire, just watching those, and Luther. watching that. But it's such an unconventional ending. But I love just the relationship between all those people. Like, I love King Shark and Ratcatcher 2, how they become buds, even though he tries to eat her.
Aww. She's definitely the heart.
Isn't she? There's heart. Yeah, so
in her backstory, there's a lot of heart, too, with that odd but wonderful cameo by Taika Waititi.
I just see him on screen and I laugh.
It just makes me happy.
You know what's interesting, too, is we love the Guardians movies. I like the Guardians movies a lot. And people can disagree with me, but there's just not that heart there. So you have Peter Quill, who's... I'm just comparing group movies.
Mm-hmm.
You have unconventional group movies. You have Peter Quill, who is sassy. You have Nebula, Gamora, who is kind of, in the beginning, justifiably angry. You have Drax, who's just really literal. You have Groot, who says one word. You have Rocket, who's just very sarcastic and bitter. So you get this, like, not like caustic, but you get this very sarcastic, very sort of...
Jokey,
argumentative vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But in this one,
a lot of heart in this one.
Like, Rax, she's just the coolest character.
Well, even Idris, we hear his backstory. We see what he's reluctantly doing for his daughter. There's a lot, and then he's fighting for Ratcatcher too, so... There's a lot of heart there.
I mean, there's a scene that you caught out that I didn't even notice where Rick Flagg calls the Polka Dot Man Pokey. Like, he's like, you know, Okie Pokey. Like, they have nicknames for him already. Like, they've bonded on this trip.
So what you were saying about, you know, the ending and this weird group coming together, I really love that James Gunn, this is the movie he pitched, according to him in some interviews. He brought printouts of all the random ass characters that he picked for both teams and their pictures to help the producers sort of visualize it. This is what he wanted from the beginning, and I just love that this was so, I don't want to say pure, but it was a thing that he dreamed up, and it's so weird and it's just so cool.
It doesn't reek of studio interference. And mm-hmm. You know what kind of sucks is that the Suicide Squad that came out in 2016, David Ayer, we love Fury, we love End of Watch. Remember the first time we watched End of Watch?
Yeah.
And
that's a tough movie.
Watching Suicide Squad 2016, there's so much meddling, and it doesn't feel like a cohesive whole, but it made $800 million. This one feels like a pure auteur-driven movie, but it's just not doing as well. But I think it's going to be so rewatchable, though, because... It just feels like such a pure experiment. And Kinnaman said that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so on Suicide Squad, they all got tattoos. They got Squad tattooed on them. Margot Robbie tattooed Squad on all the main cast. And in this one, so Kinnaman was sticking up for Suicide Squad, but he said he loves this one because it's a realized vision. It's like there's no meddling, there's no reshoots. And the way James Gunn directs, which is really interesting, where a lot of people just move, and then come back and do reshoots. He stays on set, and he tries to get everything there so they don't have to come back. So you have some really long days, you have a lot of takes. They showed on behind-the-scenes footage him talking on the microphone. Like, he's always on the microphone. He always has something for you. Try this, try this, try this. Like the God mic, trying to get to people. And it was similar on the experience on Guardians of the Galaxy 2. He sits there, and he's like, okay, now say this. Now say, my butt's on fire. I don't know. But yeah, he's always feeling. I read that
he's very collaborative with his actors, too. To your point about the microphone. It jogged my memory. I saw an actor say that. You know, he actually came, I was having a rough day. He put down the mic and he came and talked me through the moment.
Yeah, it's cool.
And then I did it.
And because I think he does want a lot out of his actors. Mm-hmm. Like, he wants this tone. I mean, when you think about Wes Anderson, when you think about James Gunn, they do have a very interesting aesthetic. And so you have to stick to that aesthetic, which isn't always natural. But I think people do like it because... Remember we were talking about McAvoy, how he worked on Split, and he does a lot of movies, and the director's like, hey, McAvoy, can you make this better? Can you just do something? Like, no, I'm a theater actor. Like, what do you mean? When he works with M. Night Shyamalan, Shyamalan's like, do this, do this, do this. Please, I'll give you one take at the end, but just do this. And I think that's the way Gunn is, and I think the actors really appreciate that, too. But there's also a freedom to improvise. But their lines, like, the lines are there. So I think it works. But it doesn't feel loosey-goosey. Like, loosey-goosey. It doesn't feel like...
That should be another character.
Whoa. It doesn't feel like... You know, sometimes we watch these movies that are heavy improv, and you just feel the improv weighing down on you. This still feels really controlled and all that. Real quick question. If you have to go on just a trip with three of the Suicide Squatters from the entire group,
gosh.
You get to go on a trip. Who would you go with?
I would definitely go with Ratcatcher 2.
Yeah.
And Sebastian.
Yeah.
Sebastian has to be there.
Is that rat waving at me?
I would assume so. So Ratcatcher 2 and King Shark, and then, oh gosh, who? I mean, probably...
Weasel?
No. Never. Bloodsport or Flag, because I just like both of them.
What about Polka Dot Man?
I mean, he's cool.
He's quiet.
He's very quiet.
He likes to dance.
Yeah, I feel bad for him. I mean, but I would know that he's just seeing his mother's face the whole time, and that would freak me out.
I would take him with, because it seemed like that adventure was really good for him.
Yeah.
Like, he was really happy at the end before he got squished by Starro. I love Starro, too.
I like Starro. I feel... So, the ending with Starro actually makes me feel bad for it. Now, you know, Daniela talks about, or Ratcatcher 2 talks about how she loses respect for him when he says, I own the city, or the city is mine. Because at that point, he's just taking innocent lives, and it's not okay. So, he's an interesting villain, because you can feel bad for him. He was floating in the stars, and he liked it. But then he comes here, and he's a captive, and he becomes... mean and manipulative. He wants to take over and kill. So at that point, he is this sort of sympathetic villain. But then I guess the U.S. government is a worse villain.
Yeah. But it makes sense, though. I mean, I think some of the best villains are... they are villains. Starro becomes the villain.
Oh, yeah.
But I do 100%. Think, like Killmonger, or like Baron Zemo in Captain America Civil War, I think the best villains... Or Mr. Glass from Unbreakable, one of my all-time favorites, where... He's clearly the villain.
Mm-hmm.
He murdered thousands with his different plane crashes, train wrecks. But you understand him because he's Mr. Glass, so he thinks there's an unbreakable person. You see Killmonger, who comes over there, is clearly the villain, no matter what people say. Even the mm-hmm. director and writer are like, this dude's the villain. But you understand him. Like, his final line is so powerful. You understand that. And then Baron Zemo, dude's a murderer. He bombed people.
Oh my
he
gosh.
Murdered people.
But now we like him.
But then he listened to his wife's voicemails before he was about to shoot himself in the head.
Oh, it's
because
so
he
accomplished.
Like, so no one will ever say they're the heroes of their stories, but you there's enough there to give them a dimension where you care for them. When
mm-hmm.
I was just happy floating in space. And the thing was driven crazy for 30 years inside.
Yeah.
Okay, that's an impressive structure, Jotunheim.
It is.
It can contain that thing.
It's quite fortified. And those blocks it's made of. That's very, wow.
Whoever built that?
The Nazis.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, German. German.
Engineering.
German engineering. Took it.
Top notch.
All right, fair enough. But that's like, they put an aquarium halfway through that thing.
They did, yes. With little vicious,
that would have killed
blobby things that have scary teeth.
King Shark would have been killed.
Yeah, I like their addition. When we watched that scene for the, I don't know, what was it, third time? I was sitting there going, now why is this in this movie? Because it's got to serve some purpose. And then I felt like it was because it showed that they identify with him. He found some dumb friends. But then they start biting him. And it shows that there is something that can get through his skin when later he falls out of a building and doesn't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Gets shot up by a bunch of bullets. Doesn't get hurt.
Mm-mm.
Nothing hurts the thing but these scary little amoebas.
They're
terrifying.
It's good screenwriting, I thought, right? Because when you're seeing it, that blood pile, I went, mm-hmm. no, don't kill my buddy.
I know. I know. I was so sad when he hit the ground. Oh my gosh.
I love all the memes with him now and Jaws when he's on like Nom Nom and he's part of the crew. Like,
oh, I haven't
more,
seen
we
those.
We need more Nom Noms.
Go
it's adorable. Hey, so how about this? Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk more of the Suicide Squad. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And let's do something real quick. Let's put together our own Suicide Squad. So we need to have cinematic villains.
Okay.
And we need to form a squad. So you pick four, I pick four. And then we're going to go on a mission and try to, I don't know, save the world. So
wow.
I'm going to pick first.
Bad do they have to be?
Well, I mean, they're not. Some of them aren't that. Ratcatcher is not that bad.
Okay.
So we can't pick any that we've seen from this. So I am going to take Stripe from the Gremlins film.
Ooh.
Super smart, evil, and just if you get him wet, that's an army. You have an army. You're going to overrun humanity.
Okay. Yeah. No. You've got a problem on your hands at some point.
Yeah. It could be annihilation for the planet.
It might be.
Yeah. So I'm taking Stripe.
Oh, I'm going to take the demon from The Dark and the Wicked.
What?
Megan. It was the meanest thing I could think of.
Oh my gosh. That's horrifying.
That's the idea.
Oh my gosh.
Do you like it?
Yeah. That's...
Oh, gosh.
Wow. That thing's going to get murdered.
Big guns.
Oh. People are just going to... Oh. I'm going to take, I guess... Oh, gee, how do I come back from that? I'm going to take David from The Guest. So,
ooh, yeah. That's a good one.
Right? Because we love that movie. And yes. Just, he would crush people.
Yeah, he would.
That'd be sweet.
Oh, man. Okay, so my next one, I'll go weirder with this. I'll take Sharon Gordon Fisherman from Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. But she's kind of a mastermind.
Wait, she drinks suicides in that
movie. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
That's amazing. Sharon Gordon Fisherman.
Yes.
So you have, we have Stripe, we have David from The Guest, the demon from The Dark and the Wicked, Sharon Gordon Fisherman. Okay. Oh, this is, how do we come back from this? Let's see. Oh, man, what's, gosh, I just keep thinking about that demon just driving people insane.
Right? Just preying on their hopelessness.
Oh my gosh. Actually, all right, so I'm going to take from Kill Bill.
Ooh.
The she's the one with the crazy, I got to get this right here. She's the secondary villain in this, the secondary antagonist. She's the, who is she? And I just keep saying, who is she? All right, I'm looking through right here. I just thought about this. Go-Go. I'm taking Go-Go from Kill Bill.
Nice. Because
she is a maniac, and she would just slaughter the ever-living snot out of people, and it would just be terrifying. Just be all right. That's what I'm doing.
I'm gonna take, oh, this is tough.
Yeah.
I'm gonna pick a shark because it feels right.
Yeah,
one of the sharks from Deep Blue Sea One.
Ooh, Gen, how about, do you want the two Gen ones or the big Gen two?
Whichever one's badder.
All right, Gen 2. Does it have a kelp breathing apparatus?
Why not?
That way it can go on land and kill people?
And go after lions and their pride.
Yeah. So we have... Oh, yeah. That's a big shark. That's 26 feet. So we have a demon. We have a gremlin. We have David from The Guest. We have Sharon Gordon Fisherman. Okay, so now we need to think of a... We need two more villains to add to our list. This is... Whoa.
What?
Whoa. Okay. I am going to take... This is crazy. I don't know if you're going to like this, but I talk about him a lot on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. I want to take Colonel Ives from Ravenous.
Oh, my gosh.
Because he's a Wendigo.
Okay.
Colonel Ives. Indigo. He just eats bodies and he gets stronger. So Colonel Ives.
Okay, I want some sort of warrior next. So I'm going to pick Frank Grillo.
From which one?
From, could he be considered a bad guy in Boss Level?
No, he's like the good guy.
Sort of.
He's a bad guy in Captain America.
Yeah, I mean, there's Crossbones.
Yeah, you can take Crossbones?
Yeah, why not?
The Frankie Grill?
Yes.
All right, so how about this? Let's actually just put together one more each.
Okay.
That way we can do... have like a whole villain squad. So we need to find villains that we want to take with us. You know what? I'm taking Shownuff from The Last Dragon.
Oh, hey.
Shownuff. Because he has the stuff. Like, he's powerful. He can do it. So I have Stripe, David, Go-Go, Colonel Ives, and Shownuff. You have the Dark and the Wicked Demon, Sharon Gordon Fisherman, the Gen 2 Shark, and Crossbones.
I know my next one. Who? I'm ready. You mentioned it earlier, and I'm going with it. Baron Zemo.
Baron Zemo. Ooh.
He's so likable now in Captain America, or Winter Soldier and Falcon.
Yeah, we got a good squad
but
here.
But he's also so smart.
Yeah. Can you make a graphic for this?
Maybe.
All right. Because it's just, these are, that demon from Dark and the Wicked, that's going to be, I just want to know what this thing's going to do. People are going to, like, there's going to be, that's dark. It's wicked.
I'm here for it.
Oh, man. I love it. So, okay. What do you feel about the attack on the gorilla camp?
Oh,
actually,
my gosh.
Before that, how do you feel about King Shark about to eat Ratcatcher 2? And then you get the entire scene where John Cena's in his underwear.
So weird.
It's just an odd scene.
That is such a weird scene, and there's so many things I love about it. Not the part with him in his underwear. That's a weird shot in itself. But there's a part where they're all lecturing each other, you know, Daniela is telling King Shark how to be a friend, and Indris calls her a little dummy, I think. It's cute. But then they have a shot where you can see, this is so random, I don't know why it's in the movie, Idris's toe. There's obviously a hole in his sock, and you can see his big toe. And I just love that that's in there. And it's so weird.
I mean, listen, the costume designer on this movie is one of the best in the business. So they didn't just let that sock bit go through. They didn't, like, so Judiana Makovsky.
Oh my gosh. I have to tell you a story.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So, David Dasmalchin, he found a cat while they were in Panama. And I'll have to show you the pictures. He adopted the cat, and the crew and some animal lovers helped him bring it back to the States. And it's now with his family, and he said it helped them get through the pandemic. Judiana made a polka dot man costume for the cat.
Oh, she's amazing.
And I figured, did you work with her when you're on Goosebumps?
She did Goosebumps, Civil War, and Guardians of the Galaxy 2 all back to back.
Oh, so you probably saw her a bunch.
Yeah, she was like, this dude's stalking me.
I mean, and Hunger Games. You were on Hunger Games, too.
She did the first one. I did.
Oh, okay.
I did 2 through 4. But she's the business.
She made a polka dot man costume for a cat.
Oh, she's the best.
Oh, guys, go on David Dasmalchin's Instagram. You have to see it. It's so cute.
And watch Goosebumps. It's adorable.
Goosebumps is fantastic.
That's so fun. Yeah, but she's awesome. So you know that they caught that on set. But then they move into... Okay. We got to talk just real quick. The production design in this movie by Beth Nichol. She made gigantic sets.
Yeah, Idris said that they were all practical.
Yeah, and then Kinnaman was like, I think these are the biggest sets that Warner Brothers has ever built, which kind of blows my mind because they did Blade Runner 2049.
And Harry Potter.
Yeah, so it's like...
It's hard to fathom, yeah.
But I mean, this, like, you know what's kind of cool about Beth Nichol, which makes me really happy, is she got her start. Well, she was working for a long time, but she really got her name in the door. She did Drive, and then she did Only God Forgives, which is one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. It's brutal and it's awesome. But she got her start kind of like in indie, grimy kind of stuff. And now she's building gigantic warehouses of jungles and just putting everything together. And I think that's just so cool. I mean, if you think about it, you shoot that action scene in a real jungle, build that real set, you have weather, you have problems. But if you build it in a soundstage, sure, there's a lot of like blue screen up, green screen up. Probably blue screen because of the green trees.
Oh, yeah.
So you have all that up, then you... I mean, you have more control in there, but that scene, people are blowing up, king sharks eating people, rats are murdering people.
Yeah.
I mean, polka dot guy destroys people. That you get some quality nudity and some very random nudity. You get some
weird
electrocutions, some gags.
So many gags.
That was when I realized how much I loved Idris's character, because there's a scene where Peacemaker, what a joke, shoots exploding round into a gorilla. And he's like, that's not a kill shot, you lose. And then the dude explodes.
Yep.
And then he walks away going, oh, that's so cool. Like, it's selflessness like that that I like. He's not afraid to look dorky in this movie. And I loved it. Like, Idris seems just perfect for James Gunn's aesthetic. And I love seeing him in it.
I feel like if you watch, what is it, Turn Up Charlie, that's how you know he's good in this world. That is such a weird, dorky, flawed performance. He's kind of a loser. And it's so good, and it translates well into this world.
He just wanted to DJ and go to islands.
Yeah,
and,
party.
Yeah, in Greece.
Be a DJ.
Yeah, exactly. Go to Ibiza, and hang out, take pills. No, I'm joking. But I guess, too, it's just all the sets in here, the costume design. That scene, though, is just wholesale murder played for laughs. And then you know that these people are probably good. Mm-hmm. And then they open up the thing, Rick Flagg's just drinking tea.
Oh my gosh.
And that makes me so happy that, like, he's just chilling with Alice Braga, who I'm glad that... I wish they gave her more to do in this movie because, I mean, she's really good in Predators, too. I like her a lot in that. But I guess she does take over the government.
She gets to be the hero at the end. Yeah. Because they're not heroes.
And she also tells Flagg he's a really nice guy. Aww. Like, yeah, you're the hero. in this, but I don't know. I guess I just like how this scene is built. And we haven't even talked about Harley and
right.
her murder scene and her red dress. And just when she shoots the guy in the chest, like, oh, well, you want to use your powers to kill kids. And that's not cool. So she just drills him right in the chest.
Oh, it's fantastic. And her little sort of self-reflective monologue afterwards.
She's like, I really think you're prettier down there. You know, like just laying there without all those ugly thoughts in your head.
Yeah, she does sell it at the very end there. It's sort of that, you know, heightened Harley Quinn at the beginning of it, her speech. And then she sells it at the end. She does bring some sort of gravity.
Can I be frank?
You might be. I don't know.
She has some of the best moments when she's getting tortured.
Well, James Gunn said that he really can get into the mindset of the Harley Quinn character. So, makes sense.
And then that 69 bit.
It's very funny.
69
soldiers.
Oh, man.
In the key scene, I think we've all seen this article by now. It was all her, where she pulled her legs up and put the key into the lock.
It's a great physical performance.
Yeah. In the flower scene, too, James Gunn said that was written into the script. He meant to do that the whole time. It wasn't sort of an afterthought. And he was drawing that onto the storyboards.
Wow. And just that action scene, too, where... Normally, I don't like unnecessary spinning in movies, but her spin, it felt very organic with the music and the way that the overhead shot.
It wasn't jarring either, and which is irritates me.
You know what? The spinning makes sense because we watch a lot of movies where characters are just standing around spinning, but they're standing there or they're upside down spinning in a wide open room. You're not moving. Yeah. This one, she had to spin because there's different corridors.
Well, and she also, I think it's better shot because she has to stop or pause with an arm and actually aim and shoot. So it's almost like if you've ever done dance and you spin and you pick a spot, she's doing that throughout and it makes it less dizzy, which is good for the aesthetic.
And I think it's a nice, good retribution, but when you watch Birds of Prey, I mean, that movie had Sam Hargrave, it had the John Wick guys. Birds of Prey had some of the greatest fight coordinators, stunt coordinators on the planet working on it. But a lot of it felt hyper-stylized and a little bit unnecessary. But as Gunn said, which I wanted to read about, I read about earlier, there's nothing really wasted in these fight scenes. Mm-hmm. So her running down the hall and then beating up everybody as she goes through there. And then shooting them with the machine guns. And then she gets the javelin.
Yeah, I was going to say, how about her joy every time she reconnects with the javelin?
And that's such a great setup, too, because what, Flula Borg from Pitch Perfect 2, he said he was just happy to be along for the ride. But they... he gives her the javelin, she gets it taken back, she gets it back, and then she uses it to get Nestaro's eye in the mm-hmm. greatest like phantom camera shot scene ever. Then the rats fly in there, and I just love the setup of that. And it's cool too, I know we're jumping all over the place, but I love when Ratcatcher at the end, when Bloodshot looks at her and he takes her under his wing. And he says, I'm going to get you off this island alive. She's like, no, I'm going to get you off this island alive.
Aww.
And when the rats are running over Bloodshot and he's down crouched, she puts her arm around him.
I know, she protects him.
Yeah, she's just like, I got you, you're fine. And just watching the rats crawl over his face. But then they swim into the eye and start tearing out the tentacles. It's such a...
Like, woof.
It's rats save the day.
It is quite gross, but it's well done.
It's such a Harley move, though. She just jumps headlong into the... Like, she jumped in chemicals for Joker to
true
do all that. So then she jumps into eyeball gunk of an alien.
She knows what she's waiting for a sign from God, and then she knows what she's supposed to do.
And she's I'm waiting for a sign of God. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, him too. I had a great rescue plan. Like, well, you want me to go back up there? Like, it was really good.
Yeah, they use her just the right amount in this movie, which I like, because there's a lot of people they have to service, especially mm-hmm. in the beginning.
And then remember when Bloodshot and Rick Flag are lecturing, or doing the plan to the Thinker?
Oh, and she's listing out grievous sins that yeah. you can't commit that would be killable.
I'm in the background. No coughing without covering your mouth.
I swear. So all of those things that she says, other than the ones that I'm walking around, the things she lists out, though, I swear those are all from the Good Place show, but from the Bad Place Museum. Those were all things that were in the Bad Place Museum. Makes sense.
Yeah. And it's just such a random little bit. And then I don't know why, but that whole empanada scene, like who ate all the empanadas? And then polka dots in the background, a Bloodshot. Didn't Bloodshot or Peacemaker, they grabbed a chicken one?
Yeah, he goes, who ate them all? And then someone else says, so that's a funny thing that you mentioned there. Joel Kinnaman said, or John Cena was saying in an interview that one of his one of the worst days that Idris had, I guess he was just having a rough day. The worst thing that happened was that day. The worst thing that happened to Cena was he had to eat 6 empanadas in one day. I want to see this deleted scene out there where they're all eating empanadas. I feel like we've been cheated. I need more empanadas.
And this polka dot man's in the background eating that empanada. Oh, I love it. And you know what's interesting too is just I love the feud between Peacemaker and Bloodshot, where I love in the beginning where he's like, I take smaller bullets and shoot it right through yours. And then that comes back at the end, yes. Smaller bullets. But I think when he does get shot in his throat, he's always been a heel. And he's always very open about who he'll murder, which is quite interesting. So it's not really not a heel turn. But I just love...
Which is everyone.
They earn that scene, though, because of his killing Flag. And then he has Ratcatcher 2. He's going to kill her.
Well, he was going to kill that innocent secretary in the headquarters of the government. There's only one person moving around. I'm going to kill her.
Yeah, and she's doing nothing. But I think they set that up well. And one more thing. We've talked a lot about Final Fights on this podcast and the Final Fights podcast. I know it's not the final fight, but I love how differently shot the brawl between Peacemaker and Flag is, because I broke through the action scenes and how they tell a story, but I like how Harley's battle, there's roses and there's people running and there's like throat slits and there's spinning, the different action scenes. But then you get to Flag and Peacemaker, and it's just two huge dudes just beating the tar out of each other. Yeah. And there's nothing stylish about it. Like, remember, there's some hits. Remember when he falls into, I don't know what it is, the grain or the corn?
Or something.
And then he falls off of it. You're like, that really hurt. Like, the stuntman got hurt. And then eventually, I mean, Flag does go down. Never mind. You're not just going to put, I can't say how Flag would just start beating him on the head with a metal pipe. But then he goes to kill Peacemaker and he gets stabbed to death and you see his heart. That's the cruelest thing. The post credits, Meg, where like his heart's still beating.
Oh, I know. So mean. You wanted it to be Flag, not Peacemaker. I mean, I guess it makes sense. We know there is a Peacemaker James Gunn show, but
that sucks.
Still.
I was like, Flag could be back.
That fight also starts off in a really cool way. They're about to have a face off. Then the building starts to collapse because we know what happens 8 minutes earlier with all the explosions and polka dots flying. But the way that fight actually starts with the helmet shot, the reflection in the helmet, it's very cool.
Oh, yeah.
And that helmet was practical. And James Gunn said it was one of the worst things to edit because it reflected everything and they constantly had to edit themselves out of it, the director and the crew.
Frame by frame.
Yep.
Yuck. But it's inventive shots like that I really like. Mm-hmm. They actually did that in Dracula Untold.
Ooh.
Just river. It's a random
with
pull.
Charles Dance at the end.
Oh, man.
Which makes it fantastic.
He's a sassy vampire in a cave vampire. Mm-hmm. I should have taken him.
Oh, yeah.
The world would have been dead.
Charles Dance in anything.
Yeah. Just pick all Charles Dance villains.
Mm-hmm. Or Bill Nighy.
Oh. What movies has he been a villain in? Underworld.
Yeah. Underworld or Pirates of the Caribbean.
But he can only go out. But he can only be on water and only go out at night. So that kind of
picked a shark.
Him. I'm very happy with Stripe. No, that's true. You could put a yada yada apparatus on him.
There you go.
And do that. But I guess, too, is... a lot of people are talking about the surprises in this movie, but remember when we started watching this, and I don't know if this was good or bad for me to say, but I was like, most of these people are dead.
Boomerang's
dead. But it's... For me, it wasn't a surprise, because it's James Gunn. What are you going to do with these people?
Yeah, logically, there's a lot of people. You can't have them all there, the whole movie.
So you know that there's going to be death. And also, I think some of the trailers sort of wrecked it. But because you just can't have that A story, then have them joining up with those guys and having Harley's story. That's just way too much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just quite brutal.
It would be so much. There's a ton of plot in this movie. And it is deftly managed, I believe. But imagine if you kept those people alive the whole time. Maybe just so much.
Yeah. And just too many people competing for screen time. Less Ratcatcher.
It's a lot of
King
fun
Shark.
The way it is.
I love... you showed me an interview where they talked about how lucky he was to find...
Oh, yeah.
To find Ratcatcher... to find Daniela in this.
Yeah, so she was a pretty good working Portuguese actress. People knew her more over there. And then she declined to send in some self tapes because she was on vacation, but she said later on she was actually afraid to act in English and not do a good job.
Oh, wow.
So then she submitted a tape and she was reading from the script, and they asked her later, were you really reading from the script? Like reading the papers instead of memorizing it? And she said, yes, I'm so sorry. But then when she did it again for them, when they brought her to America, and they actually brought her to Atlanta, she did it perfect.
Wow. She's so natural in this movie.
Yeah. She's fantastic.
Has there been so the shark, her, have there been more likable characters in superhero movies?
I don't know. That's tough because I love both of them. And I love Idris's character too.
Yeah. I the whole crew I just really adore. I can't think of, I like them more than the Guardians crew, but I think that's on, there's more earnestness here than in the Guardians movies, I think.
And yeah,
that's
why Guardians I really like them. Has the weight of having to be part of the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little bit less, I feel.
And I think that's, I think that once again is a testament to James Gunn. I mean, you're watching Slither, and I mean, all this chaos is going down, but you feel for some of these people. And I mean, one of my favorite lines in Slither is when, TDK, or Nathan Fillion, the detachable kid, when he's so talking about getting drunk, he's like, I can't, I got too much muscle mass, I can't. But let's talk about him in this movie, too, the most unnecessary power, and he's just slapping people.
What the heck? I think you made this point that they should have put some guns in his hands.
Yeah.
Why didn't they?
I have no clue. I mean, the gag is really good.
Yeah.
Maybe the bullets run out, and then this drops him and starts slapping people. But it's such a silly...
He had an interesting comment. I watched a video interview with Nathan Fillion saying that about the practical sets, just how massive in scale it was. And they built these container sets where, you know, they've got the set and you walked through these gates of containers, but the containers themselves were functional. Like one was a break room and one was costume and one was makeup. So it was just this crazy machine that was working on these massive sets.
Brought a lot of money to Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
And Panama.
True.
Like they filmed a lot out there. And like the extras that they had with all the Starro masks and all those types of people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Idris mentioned that how they were practical crowds a lot of times.
Wow.
So not just practical sets, but lots of big, wide crowds. And I guess he appreciated that as an actor, you know, actually being there with stuff to act off of.
I mean, that's always the best, right? And you talk about The Phantom Menace, where people just looked at green screens, you're surrounding yourself with it. I think it's easier to get in character with that. Like that's, I don't know, Renny Harlin was talking about that on 12 Rounds, where he had John Cena, he just had him in everything to get him acting better, because he was so fresh to the game. So that's why he was dropping, that's why he was in the cars. He wanted him to be more comfortable. And Roma, they cast non-actors, so they built sets with real tile, real walls, like almost real homes, not like a cardboard set.
Yeah.
Not cardboard, but like balsa wood set.
Yeah.
So they built actual homes that when they walked barefoot, they felt the tile on their feet and it felt real. So that led to more naturalistic performances.
Huh.
We got to give some props to the actor Joaquin Cosio, because he does pull off the 69 bit really good. And he has a great death scene where Starro gets onto his face and he just gives up. But we love the show Gentified. Where they
own the family taco shop and they're battling gentrification. And
yeah.
It's such a nice show. But I love the moment in this movie you just mentioned right before the starfish slaps his face, where he very visibly, I think he takes off his hat and he gives up. He knows he's totally out of his league. You know, overthrowing military and planning a coup, that's all within his normal day-to-day. He can do that crap. But Starro, it's obviously a different realm for him, and he just gives up. That's a great moment for an actor.
All he had to do was cover his face, too, which is kind of crazy.
True. Yeah, that's true.
Just kind of do that. Because they were bouncing off of Starro. They don't seem to live long once they get barfed out of Starro's armpit.
I don't like that visual, but it works.
All right, so hey, before we get out of here, I want to know your three favorite moments.
Yes, I was waiting
for
this
film. So what are your three favorite moments?
Oh, goodness. Okay, I have an entire list here. The first one is probably when they're on, the first group is on the plane about to get dumped into the water. And who is it? Is making jokes at him. Boomerang is making jokes at Savant, Michael Rooker. And he just looks at him and sighs and looks so irritated and tired and disappointed, like he doesn't want to be there. It's a really great facial acting for Michael Rooker.
Am I next to a werewolf? You sent me next to a werewolf.
Oh my gosh.
He's murdered 27 children, but I think we got him right.
You go. You do one.
All right. I'm going to go with the club scene. Just watching, like, what, Daniela dancing, and then John Cena doing the weirdest dancing in a very short polo.
In very short shorts.
Cena's just doing elbows very slowly. But then you get Polka Dot Man surrounded by his mom doing the oddest dancing. Such like a...
It's like full body dancing.
Yeah, it's just such a weird, funky... It's bonding. It's just an odd scene. And you gotta understand, I mean, I'm sure James Gunn was playing music when they were dancing, but that takes a lot of work to have everybody in there dancing, and they pulled it off. I love that club scene. So that's it.
My next one is when they're on the plane at the very end and everyone's leaving, and Sebastian gets onto Bloodshot's leg, and we have cats, so sometimes, you know, they come up and they use their little paws to prep the area they're gonna sit. And Sebastian does that on his leg.
Oh, man.
And preps himself to sit down and curls up. So cute.
Okay, my number two. I guess we could do more, but my number two is I like when Bloodshot goes, well, you got daddy issues. And she goes, Ratcatcher, I have no daddy issues. I loved him. He was great to me. And then they cut to Taika later on. Just rats are the most, you know, misunderstood characters. And it's just, but there's so much heart there. And it's an interesting narrative. And the guy had flaws, but he loved his daughter. I don't know. I just think it's really interesting. And it has heart to it. And just that whole two scenes tied together, I'm going to say, is my number two.
Oh, that's a good one. You know, I have a note here that says, Taika's accent, ?
Yeah. He just shows up and does whatever he wants.
We love it. My last one is when Polka Dot Man fires his polka dots. He throws them, as John Cena says, at Starro's leg because he sees his mom. And it starts disintegrating the mom's ankle. But all of the zombie people with the stars on their face grab their leg at the same time. It's just a weird, hilarious gag, and I love it.
It's beautiful. Wait, if you think about it, Slither, the alien comes down and takes over everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then they become hive minds with that. So he does enjoy a good alien invasion type picture.
Mm-hmm.
Just had to bring that up. Now, I was going to say, I remember seeing Harley being tortured. I'm like, this doesn't feel right. So I love that she was just waiting to murder people. That mm-hmm. made me really happy. I like the Where's the Empanadas. I like that they gave Flag a lot of humor. That fight scene is just brutal. But my number one scene's Weasel. Just, it's the weirdest creation. And then it lives at the end. But it does a belly flop. Like, that's how, this is so funny. And then Weasel can't swim. Oh, did anyone check if Weasel could swim? And it's just, it's the oddest, it's a child murderer.
So weird.
But that's my humor. Like, not child murder humor. But it's just so out there that I love it.
Yeah, it's so odd, but it works somehow. If you're going to... You just mentioned a bunch there, so I'm going to say one more. When Ninawe has an absolute fit over wanting to have a fake mustache disguise.
Oh, yeah.
And he even says, see? And they go, look, he's learning Spanish. He gets so mad, and he stomps off. It's adorable.
Nom nom?
Nom nom.
Oh, gosh, I love that. All right, cool. Well, all right, how about this? Two scenes you weren't a fan of before we get out of
here. Oh, no. Everything with Weasel.
What about the bag of dicks conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I could do without it.
I just don't get it. It doesn't seem like a bag of dicks movie.
No, it doesn't.
That's more like a 4-year-old virgin type thing.
It just really doesn't work for me, but I can ignore it.
Why would someone eat penises? I guess that's kind of a funny line when she says that. All right, what's another thing?
I didn't write down stuff I don't like.
Because we can't be 100%.
I mean, I guess any... Oh, well, actually, I hate the opening scene. I get it. But I hate where the bird gets smashed.
Yeah.
It is very brutal, and I don't like watching the bird get smashed.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts. All right, so then me... I loved every bit of it. I made you do two. I'll just do one.
I did notice how on the nose the music was sometimes, but I felt like it really worked.
There's an art to it.
Yeah, he balances it so well.
And then the final smile. Oh, the thumbs up between Harley and Bloodshot.
Yeah.
And then when she smiles at him at the end, he's kind of like, oh, man. Like, I'll be your friend. He's like, oh, Milton. Oh, Milton dies.
Oh, Milton. Poor Milton.
Milton got wiped out.
He really did.
Who's Milton?
I would have known if there was a guy named Milton with us.
Why is he not in the van? I don't like Flag dying.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
I get it.
Yeah.
Weasel. But I think that's it. Yeah. I'm just going to say that.
That's fair.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this. I'm really glad we got to do it.
All right, well, thank you for joining me, Megan Nom Nom Hoffmeyer.
I'm here. Nom right. Nom.
So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Megan Hoffmeyer, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.